Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russ and Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
I'm Mark Hsu, and I have a trading problem.
I'm Dynasty Coach A, and I haven't gotten a trade done in like 2 months, so that's a problem.
That is definitely a problem, but hey, welcome everyone to session 407 of the Trade Addicts Podcast. And I think I got Frank's thing down, where even though the network has gone away, the DAP is here to stay. Give me a DAP. There we go. I always forget what he said. I finally got it after he's been doing it for like 100 episodes. But anyway, as you heard, though, Frank is not here tonight. He's gone from frequent guest to now, I guess, fill-in co-host. Mark Hsu is here tonight. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, I was just happy to get the call. To say that I'm like your right hand man, maybe your left hand man more so, but I'll take it, you know, either way. Happy to be here regardless.
We call that the stranger.
And John's another great friend of the show. Always happy to have him on. John, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome. Yeah, it's great to be back. Definitely the podcast I've been on the most beyond my own at this point. So I'm happy to say that.
And we love having you here. So John, like I said, has been a frequent guest, so we don't need to do the interview stuff. But we will get into the news that Frank has given us. And there's been a decent amount of news this week with the, you know, free agency coming up and everything that's going on with that. So first, Dave Montgomery to the Texans. What is Dave Montgomery worth now, and do we care about what he marks anymore? John, I'll throw it to you first.
I think he's worth the same. I've thought about this, and you know, since he got traded, and I'm like, I mean, he's going to a worse situation with the worse O-line. You know, worse offense. We're hoping they're going to put things together there, but you know, it's not great. I'm sure that Woody Marks is going to at least take some of the carries. It's not just going to be the David Montgomery show, even though I do believe David Montgomery is better. I don't think his value's really changed. It's one of those things where like normally I would say he's worth like a second. Unfortunately in this draft class, like a late mid to late second is almost nothing, or you know, compared to other draft classes. So I don't even know that I want to call him a second. I mean, it's crazy to say he's worth a first, but I mean, the sad truth is in this draft class, he might be. You just have to get like what you normally think about like trade value and pick values out of your head, because that's just not how it is this year.
Yeah, I'm just really starting to dive more into the rookies. I know you're doing that well ahead of me and other smarter people are. but yeah, everything I'm hearing is that's exactly what you're saying, is that this class is it's just that bad. okay, I thought you were going to say something. Okay, but yeah, I agree with you, though. Like, Montgomery looks like he might have a, you know, possibly slightly increased workload, but I think that's, like you said, all offset by the fact that almost every other aspect of it is kind of worse for, you know, in terms of the surrounding cast and everything else. But Mark, any thoughts on either of these two guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not horrible for his value necessarily. I think, you know, he got to a spot where he's probably going to see a considerable amount of touches, but also like they kind of they took their best offensive lineman and sent him away in the deal. Yeah. So it's also kind of like a you know, six of one, half dozen of the other sort of thing. Yeah, in a normal draft class, you'd think like maybe a contending second like gets it done. Maybe you're looking to, like, if you're looking to like offload like a younger, you know, receiver you don't believe in anymore for David Montgomery, I could see you maybe pushing, you know, pushing that kind of deal out. Like a, like, would you send Xavier Worthy for David Montgomery right now?
I would.
I mean, if you're desperate for,
I'm not a big believer in Worthy though.
If you're desperate for running back, I guess, but you know, the sad part is we don't know if the Texans are done. I mean, I think they should be. Right. I don't think that they need to go get another running back. But the truth of the matter is that Montgomery is going to be 29 years old in June. And I mean, you know, they obviously Nick Chubb is probably not going to be with the team anymore. Or if he is, he's like 32 year old Nick Chubb that, you know, has been replaced by Montgomery here. The Woody Marks thing really didn't work out. So, you know, I don't know that they're 100% done, but there's also not that great of a running back class. So it's not like, oh, last year, you know, you could say, oh, you could replace someone in the fifth or sixth round. That's not as viable this year. So, you know, they might not be done, but at the same time, he's probably going to have at least a year to do it, maybe two. I wouldn't trade Worthy. I'm also kind of a Worthy stan, so maybe that was just the wrong player. But you know, I think you're in the right, you're the right mindset. And maybe that player doesn't work for me, but like you're in the right mindset of try to find someone that maybe has disappointed and go get yourself a player that's going to, you know, be a starting running back.
And then, yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. Right. It's just somebody like, I mean, like if you take, pick your receiver you don't believe in, Matthew Golden or somebody like that, you know,
yeah. Yep.
And then, of course, with free agency coming up pretty soon, we're seeing a lot of people getting tagged, a lot of people being released. Cowboys officially tagged George Pickens. Looks like he'll be a Cowboy for at least this year. And the Cowboys offense is fully returning as constructed, you know, with the resigning of Javonte Williams as well. So we saw that Pickens actually outproduced Lamb this year. Where are you at with Pickens and Lamb, John?
All right. So, I mean, we can go into it and just talk about like the actual play on the field or all that. But honestly, the second that he got tagged, he essentially said, I will not play on the tag. And I know like we go through this every year where every player says that. And then, you know, they go back and forth and sometimes they get a deal done. Sometimes they don't. I don't think the Cowboys are going to get a deal done. They have to pay like so many players. And I just don't think Pickens is going to be that priority pick there. Or for them to pay. So it, like, if there was ever a player that you would say would actually be dumb enough to hold out and pay the fines and all that, don't you think it would be George Pickens? You know, like, or at least at the very least that it would be some kind of issue. And then we've seen what happens a la Brandon Ayuk and all those, you know, Terry McLaurin players that hold out. What do? They get hurt because they're not working out properly. They're not working out with the team. They're not doing a lot of things. The second he got tagged, and the second he said, I'm not playing on it, I mean, if I had any George Pickens, I've never been the biggest Pickens stan, but like if I had any George Pickens, he would have been on my block that second. I would have been sending offers, trying to get deals done because it just scares the crap out of me. And that's not even talking about, you know, obviously Lamb coming back to health or, you know, the defense playing a little better. Maybe they don't have to throw 150 times a game, like all that kind of stuff that can possibly happen as well.
Yeah, to your point, Frank put on here he's a Cowboy at least in 2026. But yeah, I mean, they can even remove the tag at some point if they feel like he's not going to get signed and it's becoming a thing, and or if they want to trade him or something like that. So I guess it's not necessarily a guarantee that he's a Cowboy in 26 despite the tag. But Mark, do you think he ends up signing a longer term deal? Do you still value Lamb above Pickens? Where are you at?
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I know that Pickens still outperformed Lamb, but how many years in a row are you going to expect that to still happen? The salary cap part of this makes it difficult for me to really be that interested in Pickens. Obviously, he's in a good spot with the Cowboys if he plays. He is a knucklehead. You know, we know that he, you know, and knuckleheads are going to knucklehead. So there's that part of it that makes me worried. I think, you know, people are I don't think people are valuing Pickens ahead of, I hope they're not valuing Pickens ahead of Lamb.
Yeah.
And I'd still be looking to go for Lamb over Pickens at this point. I don't know. It just feels off to me. I'd probably be selling Pickens if I had him. He's not somebody who's on a lot of my rosters though. So
I'm curious, if he goes somewhere else, if they do trade him, do you think he was just in the perfect situation last year, or could he be somebody else's wide receiver one and still have pretty good value?
I think he was in like a pretty ideal situation for him last year. And I think, again, in this offense, he still can be that. But again, like it's hard for me to see how they're going to be able to make a long-term deal happen. And if it's a one-year deal, I just feel like it's going to be a contentious year, you know, where a lot more of what happened at the end of his Pittsburgh tenure sort of comes out more so, you know, than did his first year in Dallas, where he was excited to be there.
Okay, and we have a couple releases to talk about. Kyler Murray will be released next week, barring some last-minute trade. Frank puts on here, where do we want him? Frank and I have talked plenty in the past about Kyler as a Viking, which we'd like a lot. With O'Connell's done well with quarterbacks, got Justin Jefferson, you got Jordan Addison. So that's one I would be kind of intrigued by. It does seem like the Vikings do want to move on from J.J. McCarthy. From some of the stuff you're hearing. But John, do you have any ideal landing spots for Kyler?
The more I think about it, the more I like Atlanta. Now I'm also a Bucks fan.
Gonna say Atlanta, man.
Yeah. I'm a Bucks fan, so that would probably suck for us, because it's been really nice not having to worry about Atlanta at all for the past, you know, however many years. You know, it's still insane to me that we didn't win the South this past season. Like the debacle that was the Bucks season is absolutely insane. But you know, it would also be nice to have kind of a competitive NFC South again. And so, and not waste the talents of Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan, like all that kind of stuff. They need a quarterback. Michael Penix Jr. is not the answer, and he's not healthy. They're obviously, they've already said Kirk Cousins is gone, so he's not the answer. They have to bring someone in. And, you know, I really think that, I feel like Kyler's been held back. Obviously, yes, he's smaller. People hate the fact that he's short and he looks funny when he runs and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, the dude is a fantasy point scorer, and he's also a producer. He's a quality quarterback. He's not like an Anthony Richardson out there completing 40% of his passes. Like, he can actually complete regular passes to regular players and make them work. It hasn't all worked in Arizona, but Arizona is one of the worst teams of the entire century, you know, and they've never been good. And in fact, I think we were probably like joking ourselves, kidding ourselves, assuming that Arizona could ever be good. And now that, you know, you think about it, it's like, what was I thinking? You went to Arizona.
Right. I would say, and I think he's probably going to get a starting job if he wants one this year. But what I'd like most for Kyler is just a competent front office and like ownership structure that he can, whether it's him having the ability to compete to become the starter, or even if he like takes a backup role where he takes, you know, a few games off and finds his way again in a competent organization, like say like the Rams take him under his wing with Stafford on his, you know, on his way, you know, his on the back nine of his career, or something like that. I would really like to see the Kyler reclamation, as we've seen with some of these younger quarterbacks that are getting their reclamation due over the past couple of years.
And Stephon Diggs is also being released. What's his value now as a free agent? And Frank asked, does this mean A.J. Brown is a Patriot?
Bag of chips. I mean, what else are you giving up for a 33-year-old wide receiver who has off-the-field issues? I mean, I think the Patriots cutting him kind of tells you everything. It's like they desperately need wide receiver help, and they're like, look, dude, like, we really appreciate you last year. You got us to the Super Bowl and all that kind of stuff, but you're a hot mess. Like, we really got to go in a different direction. I mean, they also owed him a decent amount of money, and they're saving money against the cap and yada, yada, yada. But, yeah, I just can't imagine. Some teams might give him, you know, some kind of minimum deal or something like that. But I think he's beyond his Diggs days and everything. And so, I mean, you're talking about being a second or third role, or, you know, secondary or tertiary role. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're getting 500, 600, 700 yards, a la like Keenan Allen last year. And that's probably about all you can ask for. And I please let AJ Brown be a Patriot, please.
Yeah, I'm with you on Stephon Diggs. I'm amazed we got as much as we did out of him last year. I didn't even expect him to produce as much as he did there. He had some solid games for fantasy there. Yeah. It wasn't fully consistent the whole year, but definitely more than I expected from a 30-something year old Diggs. But Mark, what are your AJ Brown? Do you think he ends up somewhere else? Do you think he's a Patriot? I know he wants to be a Patriot, I think.
I think the money still doesn't necessarily make sense. I know that they're doing all this window dressing with the Eagles, but again, with Howie Roseman wanting to make the deal, and also it seems like he's getting a little greedy with what he's asking, especially with what the Eagles would have to pay, or, you know, of his salary cap that they have to pay to just let him go. It still seems unlikely to me. I do think if it's anywhere, it's going to be the Patriots, but I don't know. It's hard for me to say. As far as Diggs goes, yeah, I don't think he's going to be anything valuable. Him getting let go again by the Patriots, like John said, nobody's bringing him in to be the main focal point of an offense. And as we're kind of seeing, like, tight end is kind of becoming a little more valuable than that slot wide receiver that you might be looking at Diggs being right now. Yeah, I don't really see him being a huge help to your fantasy teams.
And one final note I'll just say on AJ Brown as an Eagles fan, I do think this, like, asking price that's been put out there is basically a lot of posturing. But I do think there is a real chance that they do not trade him. I definitely think he could just end up playing in Philly again. I think he wants to get a lot, and that's why he's asking for, you know, putting out there this, you know, whoever put it out there. I'm sure it was somebody in the front office that they want this ridiculous amount for him so that he can get at least a first or something like that. Not the, you know, he's not getting the first and second and whatever else he might want for AJ Brown at this point, but.
Right.
Rocky, I don't think you understand. I have 41% DVS. I need this trade to happen.
I just think, honestly, the way that it's set up, though, it just feels like the asking price is like Howie Roseman coming out and saying, like, this is what we need for this to even work for us.
That's what I mean.
It's already too high. So, like, it does not seem likely to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I definitely think he could be an Eagle in 26, though. And then some running back news. The Jets officially tagged Breece Hall. Seahawks did not tag Ken Walker, and he will be a free agent. And the Vikings will release Aaron Jones if they cannot find a trade partner. And they're seeming more and more like a team who is drafting a running back. So I guess, John, I'll let you – any of these three, or all of them, if you want to, that stick out to you as an interesting dynasty point here.
Well, I mean, I really thought, you know, with the Charbonnet injury and everything, that the Seahawks were going to push harder to keep Walker. But, I mean, they made it pretty clear, like, right away, like, hey, we're going to let him go test free agency and do all that kind of stuff. So, and then, you know, the Giants have basically you know, obviously it's hearsay or whatever, but Giants have basically said, like, that's our guy. We want him. So, you know, it seems like he will be a Giant probably. But I kind of love that fit and everything. So it works out really well. Obviously, I wish Charbonnet didn't get injured. Aaron Jones obviously wasn't really Aaron Jones anymore last year. You know, unfortunately, there's a reason why they're letting him go. You know, but at the same time, it says, like, this is a team who's going to draft a running back. I mean, there's only a couple of running backs that you can even possibly draft to say that this is going to be a starting running back with a starting role. I mean, there's really maybe four that I would even consider that. Beyond that, you're talking about, you know, like 1Bs and you know, twos and stuff like that, that probably you're not going to be replacing an Aaron Jones with. So, you know, that'd be the biggest concern with that is, you know, like who would they bring in? Obviously, we're not expecting them to take Love. So, you know, like who would it be? And,
ask you that. Like, everyone knows about Love, but like who are your other top three guys that you think could actually come in and start?
So, well, the funny thing is that, you know, Jadarian Price and Jonah Coleman were kind of the consensus 2 and 3. A lot of people liked Emmett Johnson, but, I was trying to push back on that because he's slow. he's small and he's slow. He's 202 pounds and he runs a 4.56. Like, that does not equal like NFL stud, or very rarely does it. But, you know, the thing is, Jonah Coleman, we came in at 5'8", 220 pounds. So that doesn't really profile as a starting running back, you know, for the most part. And he didn't run. So that's kind of scary. So you kind of have to drop him a little bit. Jadarian Price came in a little smaller than we would have hoped. And he ran a little slower. So the only player that I can really think of is Mike Washington Jr., who went out and is basically the fastest man alive at 223 pounds, ran a 4.33 40 at the combine, just jumped out of the gym and the burst scores and all that kind of stuff. So I don't deal with Raz. I don't do anything, but I've heard people say it's the best Raz score ever or something like that, for a running back, or maybe for any player. I don't know. But, you know, that I was thinking that one might actually work. You know, you get a guy who obviously has feature back size. He has a receiving profile, although it's maybe not like a true strength, but he has the profile, and he has ridiculous speed. That could work. But you're really talking about one player and saying like he has to go to this one spot, you know?
Right. Mark, any of those three running backs, anything stick out to you that you want to comment on here?
Just free Breece Hall. Like, just.
Yes. I'm with you.
That's really the only thing.
That one hurt.
I mean, like, I get the Giants still wanting a little more. Like, honestly, it's going to be hard out for running back for a lot of teams here. I guess, again, with the draft really not having a lot of ready to go talent. And then just honestly, with the way the cap has exploded, like, it's like almost. It's a crazy number, right? It went from like 200
yeah. I'm pretty sure it's just over 300 mil right now.
Yeah, 210 to like 300 million. Like, there's going to be such an overinflation of running back salaries that are going to get paid this year, I feel like, because of how desperate a lot of teams are going to be. That I get it. I get why they want to go for it. I just don't like the idea of paying for it, especially when you have Scat. I get he's injured, but I don't know. That's not really something I feel like the Giants are quite ready to invest in. I know they're better. They have, you know, their guy in Jackson Dart, and their offensive line is, you know, top half of the league, on the way to getting into the top 10. But I just don't want to put that investment into their running back room just yet.
And then a couple minor news notes to finish us off. Rashid Shaheed will not return to Seahawks and will test free agency. Colts give Anthony Richardson permission to seek a trade. Frank says, jokes aside, here's hoping for a fresh start. Real quick, do any of you have any hope for Anthony Richardson in somewhere else? John said, shakes his head no.
I think, you know, like maybe he gets a nice looking option, you know, opportunity in Florida, his home, you know, where the magic started, and he maybe goes to the Dolphins and gets a look there, but not counting on that by any means.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be much worse than Quinn Ewers. So,
right.
And Frank's gonna kill me because I think we're gonna skip the what's he worth section again this week. So this new segment that we're trying to incorporate some weeks, but. I felt like with John here, we need to talk. He got into a little bit with some of the running backs already, but we should probably have a little bit of rookie talk because we didn't really have anything else that was on the show sheet here. So we're going to kind of squeeze it into this spot. I guess, John, with the combine, you know, just finishing, what are your thoughts like post combine on like who raised their stock, who interests you more maybe, and things like that?
So this draft class, and this has been my go-to saying or whatever for this draft class for a couple months now, and I think the combine only helped that narrative, and that is we have to – our job this year is to avoid the landmines even more so than drafting the best players or anything like that. Obviously, the goal is to draft the best players. But there's so many landmines in this draft class, and the combine didn't help that situation because some of these players that have never done anything in college, I mean, literally, like, no production profile whatsoever, went out and ran a 4.35. You know, we have players that are 6'5" running 4.37s. You know, like this is the class that has that literally broke the record for the fastest wide receiver draft class ever. As far as like who went to the combine, we had 25 wide receivers who ran faster than a 4.5 40, and we had 11 that ran faster than a 4.4. So 11 players ran a 4.39 or better. You know, the wide receivers, 11 wide receivers ran a 4.39 or better, and it's just unbelievable. But unfortunately, most of them are not that good. So, you know, like even like Kenyon Sadiq is one of the biggest risers. If you haven't already heard of him, he's a tight end out of Oregon. He went out and broke the record for the fastest 40 time ever from a tight end at, what was it, 6'3", 241 pounds. He ran a 4.39 40, and just ridiculous speed. He broke the vertical record for about 8 minutes before another tight end broke the record after him. And that record has been there for a while too. I believe it was from Vernon Davis, if I remember correctly, but it's been there for a bit. He broke the record. Then Eli Stowers came in, broke the record again by 2 inches from him. But Kenyon Sadiq, like, fastest man alive for that size, all that kind of stuff. But his production profile is actually really bad. And unfortunately, it actually got worse over time. This is not something where, like, oh, he slowly got better. The good news is he's 20.8 years old. He has time to get better. But people are, because of that 40 time, because of the combine and everything, they're starting to talk about, I'm going to push him up into the 105 range, in tight end premiums and stuff like that. You're talking about taking like a Jordan Tyson out, putting in of the 105 range and putting in a Kenyon Sadiq. And I just have a feeling it's going to take a few years, a la Vernon Davis. Like he really looks like a Vernon Davis clone, like, you know, size, speed, athleticism, all that kind of stuff. It took Vernon Davis 4 years to hardly do anything. It took him 5 years before he had a 1,000-yard season. And that's not to say that, you know, it's going to happen exactly like that, but I could see it happening where, like, he's not a perfect route runner or anything like that, but those are going to be the guys that get pushed up because of the combine. Guys like Eli Stowers, Kenyon Sadiq, you have Chris Brazell ran a 4.37. You have, what's his name? Zachariah Branch ran a 4.35. Dude's 5'8" almost on the dot to the T. And literally every single pass he's ever caught was right around the line of scrimmage. I could go on and on and on, but like I said, the point of the story is this year we really have to focus on who not to draft almost more than even who to draft.
Something I also wanted to ask you as you're talking there, I was thinking about this. How much stock do you put into the combine in general? Because I've said it a million times on this podcast that I personally don't really care about the combine except for the fact that general managers care about the combine, right, like where it ends up affecting the people's draft stock. That's the only real thing I put, like you said, like guys that had no production profiles in college and then go nuts at the combine do nothing for me personally. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's I definitely think it's more important for draft capital purposes and stuff like that than it is even for anything else. Like I talked about Mike Washington running a 4.33 at 223 pounds. He was originally projected to go in like the fourth round of the NFL draft. He's probably going to be a second round pick now, maybe third round pick, you know, something like that. But that's obviously going to get him onto more eyes, you know, more people's boards for rookie drafts and things like that. So he's going to move up because of that reason. Zachariah Branch, I just got done talking about. I've heard people talking about it, and then he goes and runs the 4.35. Nothing has changed about his profile. He's a gadgety 5'8" guy, but yet he ran a 4.35. He's probably going to be drafted in like the mid second, early to mid second round in the NFL draft, and people are going to draft him in the first round, like the late first round of NFL or of rookie drafts. Do not do it. Just don't do it. So I do use it in you know my modeling and things like that. And Beth, I use height adjusted speed score, weight adjusted speed score, depending on the if you're running back or a wide receiver or tight end. So I do use it, but it's just, it's one piece of the puzzle. It's not the end all be all. And that's why I said, I don't use RAS score. I've never looked at any of that kind of stuff because I feel like people go, oh, you hit that threshold, so you're going to be good. Or you didn't hit the threshold, so you're not going to be good. And I say, okay, maybe you didn't hit that threshold, but you hit every other threshold that I look for. So like, I'm not going to overly freak out about you not being fast right now.
And with regard to, talking about just like avoiding landmines, I feel like this rookie draft, like your, you know, for your fantasy leagues is just incredibly scary because those guys like a Branch, like Mike Washington, like a Stowers, people are going to want to take them with single digit picks. They're going to want to take them with like, you know, mid to late firsts. And that just, I mean, that scares the hell out of me to have to want to put like, go, you know, plant my flag on somebody like that when really in most other draft classes, you might be looking at them in like the 10 to 12 range at best. And then like maybe at the beginning of the second round.
No, absolutely. And not only that, but like this is one of those years where like generally speaking, if you had say three picks in the first round, you know, you made some moves during the season, during the offseason, you have three picks. You know, you're probably thinking I'm going to hit on two of these, two out of the three or whatever, you know, maybe I miss one. There's a legitimate chance especially if you don't truly pay attention this year, that you could miss on all three of those first round picks, which is unbelievable. But just think about how much you could ruin a team. Like you traded away a couple players and now you're like, you know, like, oh, I want to get younger. I'm trading away Derrick Henry. You know, I'm trading away Davante Adams and I'm going to go get Zachariah Branch and you know, Eli Stowers, and then like they do nothing, and you're like, well, I'm gonna be here for a while at the 101, you know.
And then, just mainly one other thing I wanted to ask you, as someone I'm just finally starting to dive deeper into the rookies, I know you've been, you know, probably looking at them all non point scoring season. What are, and maybe there's not much to answer to this question given how weak this draft class is, but what are some like under the radar names that you're liking that people you feel aren't talking about as much right now?
So it's weird. Eric McAllister is a name that like at first no one talked about him. Then all of a sudden he started getting some heat. People started posting about him, and then he didn't run at the combine. So it's a kind of like out of sight, out of mind kind of deal. And I feel like he's falling right back to where he originally was. I've heard people talking about drafting him in the third rounds and all this other stuff. I honestly, like, I'm going to do my best to move around and do whatever, but like, I would have no issues drafting him at the end of the first. I really wouldn't. I like him that much. I believe, you know, obviously this isn't going to give people, cause he's a TCU wide receiver. People freak out because they probably just overdrafted Jack Besh last year. They overdrafted Quentin Johnston, you know, a year or two prior. But
Jalen Reagor was also TCU, right?
Was he? Yeah, I think you're right.
I only know that because I'm an Eagles fan and I'm scarred. But
So I mean, it's not the greatest thing, but here's my comp for Eric McAllister. You know, take it as you will. He is Quentin Johnston, but with hands. He has the ability to catch a football. So imagine if you had Quentin Johnston, like last year, all of a sudden Quentin Johnston was able to catch the ball. He was actually a decent wide receiver. So you know, I think people like have that nasty taste in their mouth, and rightfully so with Quentin Johnston. But honestly, if you look at their metrics and things, they're very similar. The way they play, the way they score, the way they do everything. But McAllister has, I mean, honestly, like I said, he has hands. He doesn't drop the ball like Johnston does. And I think he will be a solid player when it's all said and done. Eli Heidenreich is my sleeper for the running backs. There's not that many good running backs in this class, and my one sleeper is technically a wide receiver, but he went to the combine as a running back, but he was technically a hybrid running back wide receiver for Navy. But he ran a 4.45 at 6 foot, 198 pounds, which is, you know, plenty fast enough. but his receiving profile is better than any other running back in this class, including Jeremiah Love. He's a better receiver than any of them. He might not be a better running back than all of them or anything like that, but you know, if he gets with the right team and he goes out and actually runs real routes and does things like that, I mean, he could actually, you know, be a flex play for you and that kind of thing. Right now, he's not getting any love. You know, he's not even projected to be drafted hardly, but I think he will be drafted at least for like special teams more than anything else. And there's a chance he could get on the field. So I'm kind of begging teams, like, please just give him a shot because he's actually a decent running back. But that's like my sleeper running back. And then, I mean, honestly, like tight ends, Justin Jolie, you know, everyone's freaking out about Kenyon Sadiq. Everyone's freaking out about Stowers after their 40 times and all that kind of stuff. And they're going to go in the first round. I don't really want to spend that kind of capital on either one of those players. But Justin Jolie isn't that far off, like grade-wise and everything for me. And yet, you could probably get him in like the third or fourth round of your rookie draft, or maybe even in the fifth round if you go that deep. So, those are like my actual deep sleepers. But you know, we can get into a bunch of other names and stuff like that if you want to.
I'm just gonna ask one more question I thought of before we move on. As a Superflex podcast. First, I wanted to know what your thoughts are on Mendoza as a prospect. And then, is there any other quarterback that you really matters at all?
So, Mendoza, you know, like people have comped him to Jared Goff, Matt Ryan, like that kind of thing. I mean, that kind of tells you who he is. Like, he could be, he's a safe quarterback. There's a team's probably going to love his attitude and him. He's got great size. He's like 6'4.5", 225 pounds. So you don't have to worry about his size. You don't have to worry about any of that. He has like sneaky athleticism where he can, you know, he can run enough, but he's not going to be a 600 yard, you know, rusher or anything like that in the NFL. I don't foresee that happening. So he's a solid quarterback. He kind of grew on me. I always thought he was going to be more of like a career backup, but the more he played, the more I liked. And I mean, what he did in the playoffs and everything really putting the team on his back made me believe that maybe he has more than I originally gave him credit for. But you're probably talking about QB 15 or something like that. And, you know, in Dynasty and Superflex and, you know, that's great. That has value, but that's not someone that you want to overpay for or freak out about or anything like that. And then as far as like anyone to care about, I mean, not really. Ty Simpson's my QB2, but that's not saying much. You know, like he's in tier 3 for me, for my QBs. And so like it's just that's ugly. And he's the only tier 3 QB. Everyone else is below that. Not great. Only 15 starts, completely unproven, got worse as he played. Not really something I like to see. And that generally goes along with like playing more difficult teams and more difficult competition, and all of a sudden you kind of find out who the player really is. The only player that I truly like think could possibly do something, but at the same time it seems very unrealistic, is Diego Pavia. But the dude's literally 5'9". And so, like, it seems so unrealistic that it could actually work at the NFL. But he's been making it work in the SEC. And, you know, like, and he's taken Vanderbilt to places that Vanderbilt probably never thought they were ever going to be. And he really did put that team on his back. His numbers are great. Of course, he's a six-year guy. So, you know, that's not fantastic. He's older. But his numbers look pretty damn good, but I don't think a team's going to take him seriously because, you know, you're looking at, can you even see over the line of scrimmage at that point?
Right. Mark, I just want to, I got the impression just from talking to you offline, you're a lot more like me in that you're kind of just getting into the rookies now, but did you have any rookie thoughts you wanted to share before we move on to the next segment?
Really just, I mean, I'm thinking like strategy for how you might be either looking to trade for or trade away your rookie picks. I mean, at this point, I think for the most part, people, you know, with 26 picks, I mean, they're stuck with them. I don't think people are going to be buying them super hard, at least not until we actually get to the draft. But I was thinking if you really have a conviction on a player, you might actually be better off waiting until after the draft and your rookie draft has kind of gone through, where maybe after a while, people look at their roster and say, like, oh, well, I still just have this player that's not making my team all that much better. And then you can maybe strike and get them for a little cheaper than you would actually getting through the rookie draft. Honestly, I was looking at it today, or the other day, really. And I mean, usually we find like players, you know, with the 101, 102, 103, if you're looking at like startup drafts, like some trickle into that second round, maybe even the back of the first. Like there's, I mean, like the 101 in a rookie draft doesn't go off the board according to Keep Trade Cut until the very back end of the second. And like, I'm just like looking at some of these names and feeling like I would trade the 101 for a lot of these guys, like that are going after Jeremiah Love. Like, I feel like I'd still be willing, especially if I had the 101, I was a rebuilding team. Like, I'd trade the 101 probably for Drake London right now. I would trade the 101 for, you know, for a lot of these quarterbacks, like Justin Herbert, who's behind him. Patrick Mahomes is a third rounder right now in startups. And like, how can you not want to give the 101 up for Mahomes right now, especially if you're a rebuilding team? Like, it doesn't make, it's like, it's hard for me to figure out like what the real value is, because I think it almost feels like outside, like Jeremiah Love is a contending team's target, right? But very few contending teams are going to have the 101 right now. So the balance of where you're actually looking to trade and buy just feels very skewed overall.
That's a good point. Okay, so normally we give the option to the guests on listener questions or trades, but we only have one trade, so we're going to get that out of the way and then go to the listener questions. So, reminder.
Trade Addicts Trades.
Trade Addicts Trades. We should have a heart here. reminder, TA Leagues are 12-team super flex PPR 1.75 tight end premium with 0.05 per return yards, except for TA1, but this trade is not from TA1, it's from TA2. The trade is Chuba Hubbard and the 105 for Jaden Reed and a 27 first. So, John, what are your thoughts on this?
Values on the Reed and the 27 first side, 100%. Like, there, no doubt. Chuba Hubbard's essentially dead to me. He was worse. He was bottom like percentile of every single metric known to man, known to running backs last year. We have Jonathan Brooks coming back, and they have Trevor Etienne on the team as a solid backup. And like, he was more like special teams and stuff like that. But he did start getting some run toward the end of the year. I don't think Chuba Hubbard will be much more than a change of pace back or third, you know, like a third option or anything like that for the team. Obviously, we have to hope and assume that Jonathan Brooks is going to be healthy, but he tore that ACL. It was before the season even started, if I remember correctly. Like, wasn't it in training camp or something like that? So, I mean, he's had plenty of time, and it was a tear of a tear. It was probably like a botched, you know, repair when it was all said and done. So I don't even know if it was as bad as like an original tear or something like that. Like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not trying to act like I know, but you know, like, I think it might've even been an easier process, because they're already talking about he's back, he's fast, he looks great and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Chuba Hubbard does absolutely nothing for me. The difference here, and I think a lot of analysis has been, you need to get to 105 in this draft class, because you have your five like studs, and then you have a bunch of question marks after that. I honestly think after the combine, I think that's opened up a little bit, and it's not that we have more studs. It's that people, like I said, Kenyon Sadiq jumps up to 105. That has to push someone down to 106. Now you say, someone in a super flex league goes, I have to take the QB2 in the class, so I take Ty Simpson. Okay, now that pushes someone down to 107. You know, like, I think it's opened up a little bit. But I think, you know, for this trade, it was probably a lot of people have been saying, you got to get to 105. You got to get to 105. Well, how do you do that? You send your 27 first. I don't hate the trade, because you're still going to get a solid player at 105. But when it's all said and done, unless you go win the league this year with whatever you got at 105, you're probably going to be kicking yourself with that value.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on this, especially what you said about Chuba Hubbard. Chuba Hubbard has very little value to me. Reed doesn't have a ton of value to me, but I'll take the receiver that I'm much iffier on than the running back that I'm much iffier on. Right. And the 27 first, I take Reed over Hubbard to begin with. And the way people are talking about 27 versus 26, I'm not sure that the value of the 27 first versus a 105 is that far off. Which seems crazy in a lot of years to say a year out pick is that you don't know where it's going to be is equal to the 105. But I feel like in this class, it's a lot closer than it would be in almost any other year. So I think it's absolutely pretty easily that side for me. But Mark, why don't you finish up with thoughts on this trade?
No, I pretty much agree with everything you're saying. It's really kind of negligible between Reed and Hubbard as it is. And then again, with the, where is it 105? Okay. So you're probably getting a solid receiver prospect, or maybe, I mean, like, maybe people don't believe in Mendoza and he falls that far to you. I don't think that's really likely to happen still, but then if not, you're the one in the driver's seat for Let's Get Nuts territory, right? Like that, you know, like you're putting yourself in a very volatile position with that 105. If you start to overthink it a little bit, if you're not one to be like, oh yeah, I need to, you know, I think you probably have a solid prospect, or again, maybe you've got turn on Kenyon Sadiq and you want him at 105, or you want one of these other guys, or you really need a running, you really need a running back and there's not a lot of running back and Mike Washington Jr. is there, and you're, yeah, you know, like then you're really in that situation. Like, it's putting you in a bad situation, I feel like, or like the opportunity for there to be a bad situation.
Doesn't this feel like this should have happened on the clock? Like you're saying like, oh my God, my guy fell to 105. I have to get him. Okay, I'm going to overpay for him. That's when it's okay. But you're saying I'm overpaying. I'm almost knowingly overpaying. You almost have to be accepting of that at this point. And yet you don't know who's falling. Like, you know, like Mark said, it could be Mendoza. It could be Lemon. It could be Tyson. It could be Tate. Really, no one, there's no true consensus yet except for Jeremiah Love will be gone. He will not be there. That's really the only consensus that you can say. Beyond that, I mean, every league is going to be different, which is why I love this draft class. But like, once again, landmines.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is it's like, if it's, everything goes as it should be, it's going to be a wide receiver probably, right? That's like your best option there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But everyone likes some wide receivers a little more and a little less. And maybe it's your least favorite wide receiver that ends up there at five. Yep. And then you have all these other guys who are getting all this smoke for the next month and a half that are just going to cloud your judgment. So I would have just said, I'm going to keep my 27, but
yeah. And that's a really good point. It definitely feels like an overpay for the 105 that would have happened more on the clock than 2 months out from your rookie drafts here. But that's, like I said, our only trade this week. So TA leagues, get trading next week. We need some more trades. But we'll finish up with our listener questions. As always, Dynastud on Twitter throws us like a million questions. I'm sure Frank probably even cut some off here, but these are all from Dynastud. So thank you for as always, tweeting a bunch of questions for us. But his first one was, what would you trade RJ Harvey for now that it's clear Denver plans on investing significantly in RB this offseason? Because there was just a report that came out basically saying that. So, John, I guess, what are your thoughts on Harvey just in general, and then in regards to this news, potential news, I guess?
So I've never been the biggest Harvey fan. I want to say I had him at 204 in my ranks last year. I don't hate Harvey by any means, but I was definitely not one of the guys that was pushing him up into the first round and saying he was going to be the clear cut stud in Denver or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, I'm not saying go trade him for a third or something like that, because once again, in this draft class, a third isn't really a third, and a second isn't really a second per se. So I still think you need to almost get like comparable value, 204, 205, something around there, before I would even really be willing to move him, because he's still going to have value. He's still going to be a part of the plan. We saw him have multi-touchdown games. We saw him, you know, definitely go out there and show burst and show the reason why the team, you know, drafted him. And in fact, I would even say he even looked better than maybe I gave him credit for, you know, as a rookie and everything. But, you know, in the back of my mind, it was always, is he a workhorse? Is he a three down back? And I think they're basically telling you, no, he is not. So, you know, I was right and I was wrong, you know, but it's kind of converging there.
I kind of agree with everything you just said there. Like, I was not a big Harvey guy, partially because I was a Dobbins stan. And Dobbins did look good last year when he was healthy and before he got hurt towards the end of the year, as he always
does. The story of Dobbins, yes. Yeah.
but you're right. I agree too that he looked kind of better than I thought he might too. Like, Harvey definitely flashed at times. But I agree with you again that I also think I don't see him ever being like a big workload kind of guy. So that kind of makes it hard to go beyond second round range in general. And that's probably why they are planning on investing significantly in running back, because they probably feel the same way. Mark, I thought you were going to say something. Mark, did you?
No, I agree with everything you're saying, but I think really more than anything, he's a hold, because the value has been docked already, I feel like, you know what I mean? Like, and again, we were already talking about that a lot of teams are going to be hard out for running back in the, you know, within the NFL, but it's also, you know, it's going to manifest itself into your fantasy leagues as well. And you still need, you know, bye week fill-ins. You still need flex guys. And he's going to be more valuable if, you know, Denver comes into an injury and then he pops up again. But you're better off just keeping him at the value that he is. Cause that, again, that 204 is, it's a, if any year you say these are lottery picks, they're always lottery. They're always lottery tickets. But like, I mean, that's like it's tough for me to want to give up anything, cause I still think he is going to be part of the plan and it'll be a year better. He's got, you know, he's got some playoff experience now, at least. Like, that line is still good. And if something, some situation were to happen where he's thrust into the role again, like, I wouldn't say he's going to be top 10, but like he might be making top 20 starts every, you know, in a situation like that. So not bad having him on your roster.
I honestly never thought this was going to come out of my mouth tonight. But I, just as we're sitting here talking through it, he might actually be a buy. If we're sitting here talking about it, if you get into the late second and it 209, 210 or something like that, and you're sitting there going, like, there's literally no one that I want here. But yet there's someone else that goes, wait, but Chris Bell ran a 4.42, or, you know, well, actually he didn't run because he tore his ACL, but whatever, like, you know, like this player, you know, this player did this, then you go, okay, I'm going to go buy Harvey. And I, like I said, I never thought I would have even come to that conclusion tonight, but yet as we're sitting here talking about it, I think it makes sense. He could be a buy. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but he could be a buy. You start getting into that late second, early third, and you just every time just try to send it for Harvey and see if it works.
No, I agree, John. I think at the best, if you're trading him away for something, it's a lateral move at best. I think you're more likely to gain value, because again, the value has already been docked.
Right.
Okay. As you mentioned earlier, free agency coming up. Dynastud asks, best realistic landing spot for Wandale Robinson. Do I want him to stay put with the Giants or follow Daboll to Tennessee, or he didn't say this, but I'll say it, or is there a door number three you like better than either of these options, John?
I mean, honestly, New England, like that seems like that would be a great fit. But I think, you know, we could basically say that about just about at any wide receiver.
I was just going to say that. New England, yeah.
Yeah. Just give us a starting wide receiver in New England, please. Yeah. You know, but Tennessee is actually not a terrible idea. Like, you have Io Manor as your X, you have DK as your Z, and then, you know, you get Wandale as your slot. Like, there's worse things out there. Obviously, like, I would rather the Titans probably go get like an actual one, you know, but there's worse ideas, and there's definitely, they were in a worse situation last year, so I don't hate that. I was kind of thinking about the Raiders, but then I was like, you know, maybe Bowers and Wandale might be kind of in the same area of the field, and that might like that kind of take away from what you're looking for there. So I'm not sure that the Raiders fits really well there. But I think those are probably the two biggest ones for me. And then I guess Miami, but you know, they would have to have a quarterback. I'm not saying Miami with Quinn Ewers, you know, but maybe Miami if Kyler goes there or something like that, then maybe we're talking then.
What about you, Mark? Other thoughts on Wandale?
No, I think that those are the two spots that you can at least feel, I wouldn't even say excited is the right word. Like you feel like you're not losing value from him. You know what I mean? Like I think overall the Giants, I think, are also like one of those teams that's probably going to look to maybe draft a receiver where they are in the draft. And same, you know, again, same with what John said. Like, I think we want Tennessee to draft an actual number one, but like if it comes out that at the end of it all, he's still the number two on either of those teams, I think it's more likely that it would be the Titans. And again, the Dable connection maybe is a little stronger there. I would feel about the same I do now about Wandale, which is not that much, but it's again, you know, bye week fill in, you know, back end flex kind of.
Hey, Wandale saved my team this year in a couple places, so he has a place in my heart always.
I'm not saying, hey, he's been on one of my teams that's won a few championships and made the championship this past year, still, like, I, you know, how much can you really value him when he's putting up, like, 500 yards with what he's doing, you know what I mean? Like,
I know we had in the fantasy playoffs on my one redraft team, he had like a 10 catch 100 yard game. It's one of the weeks of the fantasy playoffs. So I appreciated
that was the thing this year. Like before, it was like 12 catches for 47 yards or whatever. Yeah. But this year, he actually broke some like 174 yards and stuff like that. Like he had some. I think didn't he break 1,000 yards total? And I'm with you. Like the rest of his career is obviously 500 yards, 400 yards, whatever. But I think he broke 1,000, or it was close to it. If he didn't, like I said, he has a special place in my heart because he definitely saved my butt where I lost Garrett Wilson, Malik Nabers, like places like that. And you're like, I have to start somebody. Okay, I guess I'm starting Wandale Robinson.
92 for 1,014, by the way. Thank you, Google.
Yeah. So I mean. Obviously, he's a wide receiver two at best. Like he's not a wide receiver one at all. He's a wide receiver two at best, or wide receiver two on a team. He's probably a wide receiver three for dynasty, you know, like that kind of thing. So, but like, I don't know. I probably have like rose colored goggles at this point.
He's the kind of guy that I feel like if we weren't playing PPR, you wouldn't think about him at all.
Probably.
I get what you're saying though. He definitely can give you that wide receiver three.
That's actually
value in your.
That's playing. Interesting. I need to go look. So my leagues, all of my leagues are tiered PPR where you only get points if you get like, you know, plays down the field. So if you catch a ball near the line of scrimmage, you get 0 points. If you catch a ball like 5 yards, you get like 0.1 points. If you catch a yard, 10 yards, you get like 0.5 points. And then if you catch something, you know, 20 yards or beyond or whatever, then you get like a full point. And so I wonder like how much of a difference there is between regular PPR and my leagues. I need to go back and actually look at that.
And what can I get for Jordan Mason now that Aaron Jones is being released? Should I sell or hold? I can tell you I just today rejected a trade of Jordan Mason for my 2/3. So I would say not much, at least from my point of view, because I wasn't even willing to pay 2/3. I guess he's a hold because I don't think it's worth selling him for anything because you're not going to get anything. I'm not buying him for sure.
I just don't think that the Vikings are staying. I mean, they're going to release Aaron Jones, but I don't think they're just holding on with
yeah, exactly. Jordan
Mason. So it's really hard to, because he did not, I mean, like he was looking really rough down the stretch and he, like, this was his year to prove himself. And I feel like, he kind of just stuck in with, like, okay. Yeah, exactly. Proved he's not trustworthy when he has that extra leadership that he, or that role that he can take on. Yeah. So I don't know. I would not be giving much more than a third, and I personally wouldn't be like going out for him.
Yeah, remember that bag of chips we sent for Stephon Diggs? Well, we ate half of them, and now you get the half-eaten bag of chips.
Okay, and going back to the Giants again, you kind of talked about this a little earlier, Mark, so I'll throw this to John, but why are my Giants so dumb and trying to waste premium resources on a running back when we have a million holes elsewhere? Are you selling Scatabooth or buying the dip? John,
I think they're trying to save Jackson Dart. They're trying to save Jackson Dart from himself. And so how do you do that? You get a really quality running back who's a good receiver, good receiving back that you can dump off the ball to and things like that, rather than taking off and running. And I think that's the idea behind it. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm definitely the guy that, you know, generally speaking, is like, we don't need to invest in running backs at, you know, fourth overall or whatever it is. But I believe that is the actual idea behind it. And I mean, like, I'm not saying the Giants are one player away or anything, but they're a lot closer than the Raiders were last year when they took Jenty. You know, so I at least they have the QB. You know, they have some stars on either side of the ball and everything like that. Obviously, we have to hope that Neighbors can come back healthy, 100% healthy, and all that kind of stuff. But it's not unbelievable to think that they could be in the mix for the playoffs and things like that with Jackson Dart, Jeremiah Love, Malik Neighbors, if they keep Wandale or not, or if they draft, I mean, I guess if they're drafting Love, they're not going to probably draft like a Tate or anybody like that. But, you know, they would, once again, this is, even though I don't love every wide receiver, it is a deeper wide receiver class. So there are players that they can bring in, you know, rookie wise and things like that that could fill a Wandale spot or fill other spots as well.
And like I said, Mark, you kind of talked at length about the first part of this question. What about Scatabooth? Are you selling or buying the dip?
It's hard. I have Scatabooth in one spot. And honestly, like, I kind of, it's such a weird spot because he's injured right now, but I don't want to wait for the draft to happen or free agency to happen to figure that out, because he could just, his value could tank based on who comes in. Like if Kenneth Walker comes in, or oh my god, if they draft Jeremiah Love, please, not, they just got out of this with Saquon, like, please do not do this again. But if that happens, you know, Scat's value is going to go way down, and then you can't really get out of, you know, or like, then you've kind of lost the value. But in my mind, Scat is kind of house money for you. You got him way cheaper than you probably needed to at the time. So, I mean, anyone who has the answer, please tell me. I'm like, I'm afraid to do anything, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of agree with you. I mean, I guess that kind of makes him more of a hole, which is a boring answer. But yeah, I mean, I feel like, yeah, you're not going to get it, especially like you said, coming off the, you know, ending the year injured the way he did, and you're probably not getting a bunch if you're selling him. And buying the dip, scares me a little bit too much too. So I got to put him in that hold range. I don't know how else to answer that either.
If it wasn't for the injuries, you know, you'd probably still be concerned. But you got to at least consider the injuries too. So I mean, it's not like this is like, oh man, he's the perfect guy, you know, perfect running back, and you know, he's just going to get some competition. It's like, well, I mean, is he 100% healthy? Is he this? Is he that? I don't. Yeah, he's a hold.
Weren't there even like some minor talk, like, does he even still want to keep playing or something like that? I thought I heard something about that like he.
I feel like that's all behind us. I think originally they actually thought the injury was worse than it was. Originally they thought like dislocation, multiple ACLs and MCLs and all the L's and everything. And then I think when it actually came around, it wasn't nearly as bad as they thought. And it was just I think it was just like a fracture of the femur or something like that. And so like bones, it, you know, bones are always worse as far as like, you know, they, it looks way worse on the field, but like I was told by a doctor, I tore the ligaments in my ankle and he's like, you would have been so much better off breaking your ankle. I'm like, oh, thanks doc. And now, you know, I'm 41 and I'm at work and my ankle's just throbbing and I'm like, oh yay, you know, yay me. So, you know, like I wish I had broken my ankle instead of tearing the ligaments, you know.
Right. Okay, so his next question, he's got a couple of QB questions coming up here. On a contending team, how many week one starters should I expect out of Kyler, Tua, Ewers, and Brissett? Other than them, I only have Burrow and I'm trying to figure out if I need to trade for a better QB2. Mark, you want to take this one first?
I mean, you could tell yourself probably one. I would say like you have to at least operate like it's one.
I think Kyler is definitely starting.
I think Kyler is probably a definite. I think Brissett is probably a definite. But like how, like until we know a little bit more, like both of those, like Brissett could play like four games before he's pulled or something like that. You know what I mean? Like it's hard for you to really have any faith going into the season. Like any of these guys that are starting off could easily get usurped is the real issue. And so I would look for just like a little more security.
I'm not trying to put down Dynasty Stud or anything like Dynasty Stud at all, because obviously he gave us a bunch of questions and we appreciate that. But I don't think this is the right question. How many week one starters? It's how many week 10 starters are you going to have here? Because, I mean, right, like you said, you might have Brissett as a starter, but it might be 4 weeks. You know, you might have, you could even have Ewers as a starter. I right now, I would, like betting odds might even have that as the favorite, you know? So like, I wouldn't even call that crazy, but is yours going to be the starter at the end of the season? No, hell no. Or if they do, I mean, they're literally tanking for whoever they're going to be drafting. So I don't think it's going to be pretty with yours. I think, like you said, you have one, but you can't even guarantee that you have the one. Unfortunately, as much as I would like to, we have seen decent players, decent to good quarterbacks go take backup jobs just because no one was really willing to give them, you know, an offer. Now the QB class or the QB like landscape right now is a little different, so I don't think that's going to happen, but it wouldn't be unbelievable. I think even Mark said it before, like what if Kyler went behind Matt Stafford or somebody like that, just get a year acclimated to the offense and then go be a stud later on. Like that, it's absolutely possible.
Right. I mean, even, and to talk about Kyler just for a second, I mean, he's going to be signing a veteran minimum deal. So like maybe he wants to be a starter, but also I think he wants career longevity more than anything. So if he can come back and be, and just get a little mentorship, I don't think that's a worse, he's still going to be making 30 mil or whatever he has right now. So like he's going to be fine financially wherever he goes. I could see him taking a non-starter role if, you know, if it meant that he was, again, finding organizational stability.
I just wanted to add, when you were talking about Ewers, I actually think he could be, even if they're tanking for the number one pick, he could be so bad he gets pulled anyway. Like, just like, because the morale of the team, like, does not want this guy starting as their quarterback.
He's so bad. I like people lose their minds about one or two games every year, and like Ewers looked okay at the end of the year in his one or two starts or whatever. Like that is not Quinn Ewers. I promise you. I watched him in college. I know who Quinn Ewers is, and that is not Quinn Ewers. There's a reason why even like the biggest Debbie fans that thought that Quinn Ewers was going to be a huge stud, even they came to terms with the fact that he's like, dude, he's like a seventh round pick at this point.
And then the next question he's asking, I guess, who is going to be the most surprising week one starter at QB? And he says the same question for running back. And then I guess depending on our answers, he's asking, how much are you paying for these guys right now? Which I did not look at these questions ahead of time, and I have no one in my head right now. So I hope one of you two did.
I'll throw out a few that I think could be starters. Mariota, I think, could definitely.
Yes, that's my favorite.
I think, as ugly as it sounds, Andy Dalton could be a starter somewhere. You know, like those two guys, you can probably get him for, I mean, Mariota, you could probably get him for a third maybe, and like nobody's paying anything for it. Any Dalton, you can probably get him for a fourth or more or less. And honestly, he could start somewhere. Like he has been somebody that I think has been talked about a little bit. I wouldn't guarantee that anyone actually ends up using him as a starter, but I mean, those are the two that I would say, like, that nobody's really talking about right now, and I think they will be talking about them, you know, once we get through free agency a little bit more.
The quarterback that popped into mind, and I don't know if this is super surprising because we just talked about his release, upcoming release during the show. Kirk Cousins is the one that's popped into my head that could actually be a week one starter somewhere. Again, given the state of quarterback in the league and all that.
I kind of think Kirk Cousins might be more of a given that he'd be a starter.
Yeah, the only reason why I didn't say Cousins because it said most surprising.
That popped into my head. That's what I said. I wasn't sure it was too surprising.
I have one that I think is pretty surprising, and it's just a gut feeling. I feel like Justin Fields is going to be starting for a team. I think there's a decent chance it's the Jets, but I also think even like, you know, the Jets have been talked, you know, have been linked to Kyler Murray, you know, like obviously we've mentioned him to five different spots at this point. So it's not a guarantee or anything like that, but if they bring in a guy like Kyler Murray, I highly doubt they keep Justin Fields on the roster and then he goes somewhere else. Now he's in Miami or wherever he is. I know he gets so much hate, but you know, once again, it's a guy that has put up, you know, a top 12 dynasty season or, you know, fantasy season, you know, in the past and could do it again. And, you know, and I think he just gets way too much hate. Like people act like he doesn't know how to throw a ball, but like, go look at what Justin Fields does on a field and then go look at Anthony Richardson. Like they're two completely different players, even though people would probably lump them in the same spot. And then none of us even mentioned a running back, most surprising week one starter running back. I'm trying to think of, that one's really tough actually.
Could Tony Pollard be a starter somewhere, you think? I mean, like, not that he's like an every down back, but like, could he get another starting job? Like where he's
actually down bruiser? You just made me think of another older running back. What about Rico Dowdle? You know, like he's basically said he wants to get starter money. He wants to get starter touches and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if the NFL agrees with him, but what if it's Rico Dowdle? Even though I feel like some of the luster, you know, I don't know. I lost my words.
Shines off of him.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I didn't have a good running back one either myself. I was trying to kind of look at the ADP here, and no one's sticking out to me.
But Pollard, absolutely. I don't know that Pollard's done. He's just been on a terrible team, so like, I don't hate that idea. Dowdle, you know, is another one. What about Rashad White? Could he be a starter for a team? You know, I think and Sean Tucker. Sean Tucker actually we just found out that the Bucks are not tagging him, or not tagging, but putting the restricted free agent tag on him. And so he's actually a true free agent at this point. You know, we talked about like Minnesota and stuff. Like, what if Sean Tucker goes over to Minnesota and is the starting running back there?
Yeah,
that'd be really interesting.
Okay, and then he just asked some non-football questions at the end here. He loves to – I saw this at the Expo last year. I still have no idea exactly what it is, but he says, when do we start the TA Gritty competition? I know one of Mark and I's buddies was playing Gritty nonstop at the Expo. But some kind of app game. But yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen because I did not get into it at all. So
I've actually just started playing a little bit. It is fun. I mean, it's not fantasy football and it's not, but it is, I mean, it is fun. It's kind of like playing Wordle, you know, that's what I equate it to.
Okay.
Like you're just kind of finding, you know, players and trying to match either draft years or their, you know, same team or same division. And it's just kind of like trying to get the best outcome And it's not really like, oh, you're drafting the best fantasy team all the time. You're just looking for like the best, I guess they call it, what do they call it? It's just like team chemistry, I think is what it says, like team, your best team chemistry based on those parameters. And so like it makes for a fun, like while you're sitting on the toilet for 5 minutes, like do a few of these, like it's that kind of thing. So like, you would find time, if you find time in the day to do it, you'd like it, Rocky. I think you would.
Okay, maybe I'll try it. I'll have to talk to Shuey about that. But and then I'm the wrong person to ask this question because I'm not into college sports much at all, which is why I don't get into the rookies until March. But when does one what does one do when their college basketball team is dying a slow death? Syracuse basketball sucks now after being awesome my entire youth, and it makes me sad. Are you either of you a college basketball guy?
I'm not super into college basketball, as you know. I didn't go to like a, you know, like a D1 school or whatever like that. So like I don't have any like allegiance. I have started following like a local team. I follow Lehigh basketball right now, and they're second in the Patriot League. So really hoping that they can maybe make it to the dance, but Navy's gonna kill them. Really, I don't know. I have a hard time really putting a lot of stock into college sports in general, like even college football. Like I'll watch the games and they're entertaining, but like I'm not having a rooting interest for the most part. It's kind of like watching like minor league, like
baseball. Or, we got to get you into C2C leagues so that, you know, because it's just like regular in dynasty football. All of a sudden you care because you're watching this, you know, this player on some random team and he's scoring touchdowns, right? And you go, I care about college football. You
know? Right.
And I'm like you, Mark, with college basketball, my alma mater. I went to St. Joe's, who had like one great year 20 years ago. So, and then have been crap basically the entire time surrounding both before and after. So,
right. I usually, hasn't helped. When it gets to like, you know, March Madness, I do like watching the tournament. That's like, that's a ton of fun to do.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely a good way to get through March, which is, you know, if you're not into baseball, it's not the fastest month. And so I enjoy that. I usually end up rooting for like Eastern teams. Like I think college basketball in general is pretty well set up for you to just kind of like pick another team and just ride with it. Not that I can't feel bad for Syracuse fans, because they did have a pretty golden age there for a while. but you know, I mean, like find another team that's of interest to you is really what I'd say. You know, like I, you know, moving into Pennsylvania, like I've been at least willing to like watch a little more Villanova, or watch, you know, I always really liked watching UConn when I was kind of like, you know, closer to New York. And that's kind of just how I go. I really more root for the local teams, which is why I'm hoping Lehigh pulls it out here.
If you want to know how much I care about March Madness, when damn it, who's your co-host's name?
Frank.
Thank you. I completely blanked. When Frank tagged me in the show today, he put March Madness, like, and who's your favorite March Madness team? I have March Madness muted on Twitter, and so I didn't even get tagged originally because I had no idea. And then like somehow like someone commented on it. I think it was Dynastud commented on it, and then I saw it and I'm like, that's the pod I'm supposed to be on. And then I actually found it and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that goes to show how little I care about that. Rocky, I don't know if you remember, we were on Dynasty Game Night years back at this point. And you were the host, and you kept asking all these basketball and baseball questions.
I remember,
and I was like, dude.
It was the name game, and the theme was like other sports. And like all three of you were just like clueless on everything.
I'm like, you picked the worst. Like, you could talk about movies, you could talk about so many things, but you talk about other sports. I'm not your guy, man.
Okay, but that is the end of our show sheet. So that is the end of our show. I want to thank John for coming on. I want to thank Mark for filling in for Frank. And John, we usually do this at the beginning of the show, and I forgot to do it. But why don't you tell everybody who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do as we finish up here?
Well, hopefully you guys have realized at this point that I love talking, and I love talking about the rookies and the rookie class. I do a podcast called the Debbie Devotional. We talk about these rookies all throughout college, but then obviously we focus on, you know, this time of year, we're focused on the rookie, the rookie class, you know, doing mock drafts and doing all that kind of stuff, but making sure that you guys avoid those landmines that I was talking about, doing that kind of stuff, and then getting you ready for next year. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not a Debbie guy, I'm not a college football guy, like Mark said, but you know, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't know what are your picks worth next year and things like that. And obviously, like, there's times where we talk about the 2029 class and things like that. Maybe you don't want to tune in for that class. Maybe, you know, like, that one isn't as important for you. But sometimes we do cornerstone rankings and things like that, where we talk about the players that are in college right now, and we talk about the players that are in the NFL right now, and we try to merge the two. So we try to make it to where it's still dynasty focused and things like that, to where everyone can appreciate it. So check out the Debbie Devotional. That would be, you know, my go-to for tonight of, you know, what you should try to find from Dynasty Coach A.
Okay, and Mark, anything you want to tell the people, tell them where you can find you, anything you want to plug, anything like that?
I mean, I'm not doing anything right now. I'm more in season other than, you know, the occasional fill-in for you. but you can find me on Twitter at Primetime Mock, or I'm on Blue Sky too at Primetime Mock as well. So find me over there. Yeah, again, like, I'm just starting now to get more into the rookie class and draft look ahead, but you know, really, you know me right now, I'm tuned into Survivor, so you know, that's
same here. But as for our stuff, I'm a Dynasty FF addict. Frank's a Frank in the chat. Next week, show note, the show will be on Monday next week to kick off free agency. And if you like what you've heard here and you're not already, you can sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. You can see Mark and John's beautiful faces when we're recording. If you sign on, we have the Cool Kids Club, where there's a lot of good talk. There was, I know, a lot of talk about Kenneth Walker and some stuff going, you know, as all these little pieces of news comes out, trade values, all sorts of stuff. So it's that's a great chat to be a part of. A lot of smart people in there. And then, as of course, always be supporting Fantasy Cares. The Dynasty Hootenanny is back on Thursday nights, Trivia Tuesday nights, and of course the Wednesday night hangout. And with that, I think that's all we got. So good night, everybody.
Night, Rocky.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLS family of podcasts. And a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FF Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants.
Daddy's the best.
See ya.